Hello, and welcome to Recent Activity, your new favorite entertainment review podcast that attempts to cover every film, every show, all at once. I am your co-host, Andrew Morgan. With me, as always, is a fellow traveler who loves his whiskey with a bit of brake fluid, Mr. Shane Beauregard. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, buddy. I'm doing well.
And if you laugh at that, it's because you and you're like squirrely about it. It's because you haven't gotten to that episode yet of The Gentlemen, which is a show that I just completed before we got on the mics. We will talk about that show. But how are you, sir? Good to talk to you.
I am doing well. Always a pleasure talking to you. I am ready to roll.
Yeah. Busy week.
Yeah.
At least, you know, in the last little bit here, it was Oscar weekend, of course. It was also around my parts. I went to back to back days of St. Patrick's Day parades. So I've had more Guinness and whiskey than I have in quite some time. So maybe that's my worst for wear voice that you hear. But I still managed to watch the Oscars as well as all 8 episodes of The Gentlemen, because that I for how much I gave you shit about when you watched all of Mr. and Mrs. Smith in like a weekend, I was like, this is my version. Here it is. Yeah. It's the bracketed, you know, instead of Taylor's version, it's Andrew's version. That's what I got, The Gentlemen. So we'll discuss it. But so you kept an eye on the Oscars. I know you're not like full tilt, like you tried to watch and or you watched a little bit of it. But yeah, it was a good ceremony. It was like almost a comeback of sorts for the Oscars, it felt like, because of the whole Barbenheimer thing.
Right.
So how much were you able to watch? Did you watch like more of the beginning?
No, like right when they were doing Best Supporting Actor, that stage of it.
Yeah, it's still pretty early. Okay. So you missed the monologue, yeah. You missed Best Supporting Actress, probably. So, yeah, I mean, and of course, Downey is always Downey. He's good for a laugh and a speech of levity and self-deprecation and whatnot. But, you know, I told you off air, I won my office pool. I got 20 out of 23 correct, which is fantastic. I think that's a new high for me because I thought it was a pretty chalky year. And in fact, the ones I got wrong, I almost won. You kill yourself when you vote with your heart
always,
instead of your head.
Always.
So, of course, 2 of the 3 I got wrong. One was I went for a Netflix movie that didn't win, which was Maestro in Makeup and Hairstyling, because that was like the running favorite actually at the time, I think, before that award came through for Poor Things, which had a very good night. But yeah, the other one was I wanted Spider-Verse too much.
Yeah.
And I should have known in my head, it's like they thought that was Miyazaki's last movie and Spider-Verse has yet another movie. And they won for the previous movie. So you know it was just like, no matter how good it is, they'll be like, we'll get you next time.
Yeah, which I still think is a little BS, man. It's like,
it's bullshit.
Yeah, just give it to who deserves it. I don't care what the circumstances surrounding it is.
Yeah.
I was shocked by that one after reading the winners and all that kind of things. I was like, how could that not win? But it is what it is sometimes. But other than that, I thought it was, like you said, pretty chalky. From what I watched, and I'll ask you, because did they do the 5 presenters all the time? Because I like that format. I didn't see that before. Like with Robert Downey, they had all the previous. I like that.
Yeah, they did it before. I guess they did it. I think the last time they did it was almost a decade ago or something. So it's an older thing that they brought back. I liked it too, except sometimes, especially with the performance stuff, especially if it's a smaller movie, I do feel bad for not showing clips in lieu of that sometimes. But I do like it. Although sometimes if you watch, I don't know how many of them you watch, but sometimes I was like, I don't even believe that you saw this movie.
I don't either. I did notice how pissed off Robert Downey, fucking Robert De Niro, looked for just being there. Did you pick up on
all,
that?
The whole show. The whole show, he looked like curmudgeonly. I think because they knew. I think they felt like at best they were going to get Lily Gladstone and that would be the end of it. And I think, I don't know, by Showtime, she was still maybe a slight favorite over, you know, Emma Stone. But like, I never believed that because, and in my heart of hearts, I guess, this is where it could have bit me in the ass like the other ones. I was just like, she's not in the movie enough. And half the time of her screen time, she's sick. Like, she's not impactful enough. If she was in Best Supporting Actress, I wonder what would have happened. between her and Davon Joy Randolph.
Right, I agree. And that's the only uproar I heard this morning was a lot of people felt she was robbed from that, but
it's a nice story, and she's very good.
Right, but someone who just saw Poor Things, like, over the weekend, I'm like, yeah, Emma Stone all the way. Like, she's
the whole movie.
She's the whole movie.
And she crushes it.
Crushes it. That movie was funny as hell. I laughed so many times during that movie in her performance.
See, now you're on for my Furious Jumping t-shirt idea.
Yeah, absolutely, dude. absolutely. But no, she was, and I don't. Like you said, like, Lily Gladstone won awards heading up to this, so it's like, it's not like she went over, you know what I mean? Like, so.
No. But, I mean, the Oscars always matter a little bit more.
I mean, sure they do.
Yeah. I hope she gets more chances. I hope it's not like, oh, well, we gave her this juicy part that is part of her cultural heritage, and that's the end of her career. We don't want to see that.
Yeah, I don't think so, but.
And I don't think that's, in fact, I saw a preview on Hulu for she's in a new Hulu series.
Right.
Or no. Peacock.
Peacock, yeah.
I think.
But no, I was happy for Cillian Murphy. I was happy for Oppenheimer overall, you know, so.
Yeah, I was trying to think of this, and maybe you can think for yourself, too, is when was the last time your, like, favorite movie of the year won Best Picture?
Oh, jeez.
Because I cannot recall, and I'd really have to dig.
I would have to go through and look at the last two decades of winners. I don't think it's happened.
I don't know if it's happened either. I would really have to go back. At most, maybe Silence of the Lambs?
Maybe, right?
I'm thinking that might be the last, but that's forever ago. I'm like, that can't be, right? It can't be like 25, 30 years ago.
It has to be for me if I have to go back and look. That's a good question, man. I have to go back and look because it's always like, I always have movies that are land in the top five, but they never win. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this year, I enjoyed American Fiction more than Oppenheimer, but I knew that had no chance. You know what I mean?
So, sure. Like, yeah, no, Oppie was my number one, so I'm very happy with the outcome. And, in fact, the more that it started to look like it was going to steamroll, it helped me with all my picks because, basically, outside of, like, a couple where I was like, well, that's a stretch, they won, what, seven?
Yeah.
So, and a good portion of all their, like, of the big ones, you know, I think they didn't get adapted screenplay. And I didn't think that was going to happen. And I nailed both of those, American Fiction and Anatomy of a Fall. So, you know, rah-rah to me. But, yeah, it was a good year. They spread the wealth enough, even for the fact that Oppenheimer rolled. The only thing that was interesting, obviously Killers of the Flower Moon being shut out rubbed some people the wrong way, but whatever. I thought that was going to happen. And, hey, welcome to the Irishman people from a few years ago, you dickheads.
Right.
And, I believe that happened for Gangs in New York, too. Right. I believe he got shut out with a bunch of nominations. So, yeah, it's not the first time or the last time for Scorsese, probably. And then the Barbie thing was interesting because the whole ceremony seemed fueled by the popularity of Barbie. And I had a feeling they were only going to get that one award, and that's exactly what happened.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I'm thinking about that best. I'm sorry. I was thinking about that best, like, my favorite movie.
It's a great question.
I want to say it goes back to 1991.
And
that was Goodfellas.
They didn't win.
They didn't win Best Picture?
No, they lost to Driving Miss Daisy.
Did they? Oh, okay, never mind then. Okay. Yeah. Well, then I got to keep thinking.
Yeah. So Silence of the Lambs wasn't your favorite that year that came out, you don't think?
What year was that?
I'd have to look. That's a great question. See, now you're really killing me.
I'm sorry. We're going off the...
I think maybe the year after. It was either 92, 91, somewhere around there.
Yeah, that's probably the same for me too. Then it has it listed as 1991 here,
right? So the Oscars of 91 was the Goodfellas year because it came out in 1990.
Right.
So it was the year after the 92 Oscars. If you looked that up, like whatever was there, but
you're right. Yeah. You're right. Okay.
So I'm pretty confident because I really like Silence of the Lambs. I'd be hard pressed to see if something beat it out that year, for me personally.
Right.
But it could have been a better year than I thought. But, yeah. Because it predated, like, the Hank-a-sance, you know, like your Philadelphia, Forrest Gump, you know, all those.
Oh,
where he was
right.
Rocking and rolling, Saving Private Ryan later in the decade, et cetera. So I really don't think. But I have to go back. But, yeah, man, I thought it was a good ceremony. I thought the John Cena thing was very funny.
I saw that. That was good.
I watched it multiple times, not because he's naked, calm down, but like because when he gets over to the podium and the first thing he says is, costumes and he's fully naked. It makes me laugh every single time. So that was good. Obviously, the I'm Just Ken, you know, performance was really good. And John Mulaney showing that he should be hosting this whole thing next year, doing his Field of Dreams bit was pretty awesome. So, but other than that, I just saw like solid, a lot of solid speeches, a lot of good times, and Oppie rolled, which I'm happy.
All right, I got it. I'm sorry. I got it. I'm looking.
Please. Yeah, share.
My favorite film of 2009 or whatever, 2008, was The Hurt Locker, and that won.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I'd have to go back and look because that was early MCU, but not Iron Man. Yep. So I'm like, and before that's that probably not a case.
Before that, it was Gladiator in 2000.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that was probably my favorite movie that year, too.
Yep.
So I'd have to really think hard. I'm like, do I like that better than I think Unbreakable and Oh Brother Where Art Thou was that year, I think, too. So I'd have to really search my soul.
That was Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Traffic, right. Aaron Brockovich, and Chocolat. Yeah,
it's definitely the best of those five. Yeah, I was very happy that year, so that's fine. But as far as like the whole year, like it's, you know, my favorite thing I watch, and then boom, it wins. That's incredible. That's rare.
Well, we went off there. Yeah.
Hey, that's fine. Honestly, I think that's way more interesting than probably last night, because last night, like I said, was chalky, and the only thing that made me mad is I wish Spider-Verse won. If that's like it, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's a pretty good night.
So. But, of course, when the Oscars are going on, very rarely are they putting stuff out in theaters that they have high hopes for, because they never want to distract from the Oscars. And a lot of times it's almost like an empty weekend. However, that didn't stop you from going to the movies and watching some things, and myself included. Here, let's bang that out, and then I'll jump into my gentleman thing, because I'll probably go off for too much. So you went to the movie theaters and saw Imaginary. Now, here's the fun part for the audience. After you had just seen it, I believe, the same day, I was like, hey, man, time opened in my schedule. I think I'm going to go see Imaginary. And he's like, I don't know if you want to do that. And you managed to have me. I canceled my movie ticket, stayed home, and watched The Gentleman instead. And wow, from your reaction to how much I enjoyed The Gentleman, which we'll get to a little bit later, please tell me why. What was the motivation for telling me that? And it got bad reviews, so you're not alone. But
well,
yeah,
okay. So I did have a little high hopes for this film. And again, it's another
trailer was pretty good.
Yeah, it's another film they mislead you into what it is and like what kind of movie you expect and then what it actually is.
Okay.
They expect
Yeah, I was about to say, explain what you thought it was and go on.
I thought it was a horror movie. I thought it was gonna be a horror movie.
Oh no, it's that?
If you look at the trailer, you're expecting scares and all kinds of stuff going on. And there's elements of horror. But not enough to make it a horror movie at all. Oh, it's more of just it's more of a suspense, at times thriller. There's one, I think, actual murder or kill that takes place, and that's off screen. So it's like,
are you kidding me? No. There's no live action kills in this movie.
No, it's off screen. What happens, right? So yeah.
So it's a psychological bent?
Yeah, kind of. Like, the basis of the movie is a woman returns to her childhood home to discover that the imaginary friend she left behind is very real and happy that she abandoned him, okay? So you have the cast of Wanda Wise. I never seen any of these people before, so they're probably not even worth mentioning. But the lead actress, Jessica. Movie starts with her in her home coming through this door, escaping, her father helps her. Then it flashes forward to her being married, newly married to a man that has two daughters already. Okay. And she moves back in her childhood home. And the youngest daughter ends up finding said imaginary friend in the basement. And that's when things start like clicking forward. And it just doesn't materialize to anything. Like, there's a boy that comes next door to try to hit on the older sister. Could have been good scares there, but it doesn't. And the imaginary friend's trying to get this girl to unlock this door for him and trap her in this imaginary world because all these kids were going missing. And then finally Jessica remembers because she had a blockage of like what happened over when she was five. And she has this unnecessary neighbor who comes over that babysat for her and kind of helped her through like remembering what happened. And the whole thing just loses traction. It just, it was a mess. It wasn't scary. It didn't do anything for me. Again, it just misled you. Now, had I gone into the movie thinking it was going to be like a suspense, like kind of story with not a lot of horror, I probably would have graded it a little fairer. You know what I mean? Because, mm-hmm. like, again, it had some promising bits in there. But overall, as a movie, it got stale, boring, confusing. They did the whole double fake at the end. Like, you think she escapes, and it's like, oh, she didn't. She's still trapped in this dream world. Oh, boy. The whole thing was just a mess from the word get.
Did it have enough? It thought it had enough confidence that they thought this was going to go forward to?
Yeah.
And oh, yeah.
It just...
So it's an open ending, or has it worked that way?
It's an open ending. It's okay. It sets itself up for a second part if it wants. And I think it finished third in the box office. I think it made like 10.5 or 10.7 mil.
Yeah, horror just prints money. And I'm sure if you're telling me there's not a lot of star power in this, which
not
I didn't
at all.
Think so when I saw the trailer, they might make their money back. So
and I'm not saying this to like to slam them, but it's not an actress I want to see in another movie. Like, oh, I want to see more of like Jenny Ortega when we first saw her. Like, I want to see her.
Oh, sure.
Or the actress from Happy Death Day. It's like, oh, I want to see her in more things.
Barbarian
pulled me in. I'm like, oh, I can't wait for her to be in something else. I'm like, okay, it was a movie. So honestly, Andrew, you have me to thank for your gentleman marathon here.
Gave me the extra time for me to finish it before this pod. So
I did.
Great.
So just buyer beware if you haven't seen this movie yet, because it's not what you expect. In fact, I read a review after the movie's over, and the critic in his little three-line blub said, if you're looking for a horror film and horror stuff, this is not the movie for you.
Right.
Which summed it up, like, perfectly. Like, so.
Yeah. Oof.
I ended up, it's right now, I want to say it's like 31% critic score on Rotten Tomato. I kind of echo that. The audience score is 52. I gave it a 2 out of 5 on this one. It wasn't as bad as what Lisa Frankenstein was, you know?
Right. We're not one starring these things and like chucking it out the window.
Okay. So yeah, the one guy's tagline is, if you're a true horror fan, this film is not your friend. So that basically sums it up.
Yeah. No, it's great. Yeah. Put that on the poster, you cowards. But yeah, it's disappointing though, because again, like last year was touch and go with horror. And I was hoping, you know, that maybe in a softer year like this year, or at least with stuff that maybe is not the big titles, that maybe horror could have been more helpful.
Right.
But I'm actually glad that this kind of gets out of the way. So that way, what is the imaginary friend one that's more, it's the John Krasinski movie with Ryan Reynolds. And such coming through. I'm glad this is not maybe going to have some lingering thing or ruin that possibly going forward, because that seems more like a fun romp, of course.
Exactly.
So that was the in-theater experience. We also had our own variety in terms of the at-home experience, in terms of streaming films that were available. You saw Ricky Stenicki, which a great weekend, again, for John Cena, as far as promoting his own self and putting that out there. This is directed by Peter Farrelly, who obviously has had the wild career of being a part of the Farrelly Brothers, and which I rewatched Dumb and Dumber over the weekend. You know, obviously with him and There's Something About Mary and all the other classics that we've all gone through over the years. And then he wins the Oscar for Green Book and has like kind of a complete flip side. Now he's back in the comedy fold with, what is it, Zac Efron, it's John Cena. Is there other notables in that cast?
William Macy's in it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and you got Andrew Santino for all you Dave fans out there.
Yeah, well, and his stand-up. He's like everywhere. Yeah. His podcast is very popular. He's kind of in that nexus of the Rogan extended universe of sorts.
Right.
Like, or he's friendly with those dudes. So, yeah. So how was Ricky Stenicki, like, as a comeback of sorts in the comedy realm for Peter Farrelly?
Not so good. Is this a comedy? I don't know.
So we're genre flipping again?
Yeah, no, it is a comedy, but laughs were few and far between with this film.
That's a shame.
Yeah, it is. He should just went back and maybe did the world's greatest beer run too. I don't know.
I forgot. And that was Efron.
That was Efron, right? Too. Yeah. So good cast here, right? Like, as we mentioned before, and I was just expecting more fun out of this movie and more laughs, right? You had a couple.
Yeah.
But they were few and far between. So basically the setup, if for all you people who don't know, is you got three childhood friends pull a prank that goes wrong, and then they invent the imaginary Ricky Snicky to get them out of trouble. 20 years later, they still use a non-existent Ricky as a handy alibi for their immature behavior. Well,
right.
The movie sets up. They're on Halloween night. They try to put a bag of poo on someone's porch, and the house burns down, and then they invent Ricky Stenicki, right? So fast forward, you got the three friends that are still together. Dean, played by Zac Efron. Santino plays JT, and the actor who plays Wes. I'm sorry, I forgot his name. Never seen him in anything, right?
Right.
So they're living their own lives, and they use Ricky to just go to Atlantic City, and JT's wife is giving birth and he misses it, and they question whether or not Ricky Stenicki actually exists. While they're in Atlantic City, they run into John Cena, who plays Rock Hard Ron. That was a little funny because he does all these dress up, like he dresses up Billy Idol and Boy George. And he does a stage show where he talks about jizz and masturbation and sex. So he turns all their popular songs into sex songs, basically.
Nice. Yeah.
So they invite him and he pulls it off being Ricky. He convinces everybody and they're trying to get rid of him, obviously. And he just keeps like coming through and winning everyone over. And it's annoying their friend, you know, all three friends. The problem I had with this movie was they don't set up their friendship well enough where you believe they would be friends in adulthood. You know what I mean?
I see.
They're all self-centered, selfish individuals, especially Andrew Santino's character. He just comes off as an asshole. Like, there's assholes in movies, but yet they're kind of funny. You see where they're coming from. He's just mean-natured and just a bad dude. Like, you know what I mean? And you're like, they wouldn't be together 20 years later. They didn't do enough depth of character for me to care about him. And even they gave Zac Efron a little bit of background, like he had abusive parents. That was mentioned like once or twice. That's why he keeps lying and gets himself in trouble. But they didn't dive into that enough for me to care, or like enough for him to get give reasons why he's always trying to cover up his escapades. You know what I mean?
I see. Okay.
It just wasn't enough buildup there between the characters. And John Cena's performance was okay. He's hit or miss with me in movies. And he did the best he could in this movie. You know what I mean?
It's amazing how you're positioning it, because I thought he was way more of this movie. It seems like you're telling me he's a lot more of a minor character.
No, once he comes from Atlantic City, he's in the movie, right?
Right.
And he does a good job, but he's supposed to be like the comic relief kind of person. And he was at times, but then it turned into just a, I don't know. It just turned into like just a regular ho-hum. Oh, that was a cute movie, but nothing. Yeah. There's one funny scene with William Macy, but that was really about it, man. I was so disappointed. I thought this movie was going to be laugh out loud funny. Like the old Farrelly brothers, like you said, just gag filled, over the top, physical. John Cena was the best part of the movie, but it just didn't go anywhere, man. It just, for that cast, I was disappointed in Zac Efron. I really was. I like him. I do. I like Zac Efron.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder if you're going through the same kind of Phantom Limb thing that I went through with Drive Away Dolls, where it's like, if the Farrelly brothers together have this, like, just chemistry of building a movie, then maybe that's how you got the best of the best, and now you're seeing just one half of that chemistry try to, like, move on, and maybe it's not all the way there, especially when they're doing the exact genre they flourished in for so long.
Right. I think you may be right, because the comic bits that are in here just falls flat. There's a scene where Zac Efron's girlfriend is a budding reporter, but yet she has to do this coverage of this duck that won't get off an egg. And Efron brings his dog and lets his dog loose to try to scare the duck. And the duck tries to drown the dog in the pond. I guess that was supposed to be funny. It was stuff like that just didn't land funny.
Okay. Yeah.
It just came off as mean-spirited after a while.
Sure.
You know, and so we got more of John Cena's character, depth of character, and what he went through and why he does the stuff he does and why he is the way he is, which is fine. But I don't know. I just didn't care much for the actors' chemistry together. I guess that's what bothered me the most about this movie. And you're right. Like, this Peter Farrelly by himself, like we said, the Great Bear Run was okay, right?
Yeah.
I love Loudermilk. He directed like 16 of those episodes, and he wrote that. So I love that show.
Okay.
But as far as him solo, not feeling it, man. Not feeling
it. Yeah. Yeah, and who knows, maybe because Loudermilk's having a moment too, that he might still even get more opportunities from this, or even more Loudermilk. I've even heard that. Who knows? But yeah, Netflix has that effect. You never know. But how would you grade it?
God. You know, at the end of the day, I was a little fairer to this one. I gave it a 2.5.
Yeah, it sounds it the way you're saying.
Yeah, it was a 2.5. Because you may like it more than me. Like, you know, my girlfriend enjoyed it a little bit more than I did, I think.
Right.
You know, it was a 2.5.
All right. Well, again, like, this seems to be one of those weekends where they're just throwing to see what sticks.
Right.
You know, because of the Oscar distraction and everything else, that a lot of people end up, like yourself, catching up on stuff that's up for Best Picture going into the weekend instead of watching what's out there. A case in point, like my review for the weekend, I won't belabor it because you guys can go read it on whatsonnetflix.com. I watched Damsel, the new Millie Bobby Brown movie, and it's super thin. There's not anything to it. They barely try to give her enough backstory to care or to show why she would flourish in this kind of, like, you know, survival story that has to deal with a dragon. And of course, the dragon's backstory has more backstory than Millie Bobby Brown, who's at the center of the frame. So that didn't make any sense. So it's like, it was weak, very weak. And not to harp on it, because I say in the article too, but Angela Bassett is poor.
Oh, no.
Poor, like overacting, and I'm like, what is happening here? I have no idea. So that one, I was saddened by that, because I like the Enola Holmes movies. I'm a Stranger Things fan. You know, we watched the Godzilla movies. So Millie Bobby Brown really hasn't had like a true like swing and a miss,
right?
And this was kind of a swing and a miss. So that's, it's tough. But to me, my star of the weekend, and probably I wouldn't shut up about it for months, because I was at parties over the weekend and we're all talking about it, and it just came out on Thursday, is The Gentlemen. And we've gone through our Guy Ritchie periods. We've talked at length about, you know, did we even do on the same episode The Covenant and Operation Fortune, Ruse de Guerre?
We did.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can't get two very different sides of the Guy Ritchie equation in just what he did last year, where we sang the praises of The Covenant, but it's weirdly not what Guy Ritchie does best. And then Operation Fortune, Ruse de Guerre seems to be like this movie that is what he does best, but he didn't do it as well as he has in the past. And it was kind of messy and flat. And goddamn, dude, just watching 8 episodes of The Gentlemen, It fulfilled two things for me. One, how many times lately, especially to start the year with the TV show, have we said they didn't map this out very well? Characters' runway just dies off. They didn't have it flow all the way to keep me interested every single episode to get me to the end. Complete opposite. Every episode, there's many of them that are almost self-contained, but every one of them has little bits that matter a lot as we get towards the end of how the chess pieces are coming together. And the only thing you can say about the end of this thing and how it looks forward is I thought this was going to be more self-contained. It looks like they actually want to keep doing this.
Okay.
And that's what I found interesting as the show ended. But man, what a fun ass show. This fulfills the, I miss Guy Ritchie being Guy Ritchie, like the, you know, Snatch period Guy Ritchie. This show feels like an extension off the Snatch universe, and especially because there are quote unquote travelers, that is what apparently we call gypsies these days. I didn't know they reframed that nomenclature, the description. Okay. They even casually say Pikey, even though I thought Pikey was a little more specific, but there's a lot of caravans, so we're all coming back to the Snatch feeling there. There's boxing elements and gambling and drug dealers and this, like, every kind of characters with, like, that signature Guy Ritchie thing where it's like, okay, there's this guy, he's a drug dealer, but he has this angle that he's either, he's like really religious, or he's batshit crazy in this way, or this guy's going to come off the top rope to try to enter this part of the business, and this business element, and this business element. There's high society, there's low society. It's got everything in this freaking show. So if you love, especially that period of Lockstock, Snatch, the early part of Guy Ritchie, and even obviously The Gentleman itself, like the movie was a callback in a way, or like a return to form in some of those movies as well. This is just that, but even bigger.
So, and, I'll go ahead. Yeah. I was going to say, is there any connection to the movie at all?
Honestly, I forget a lot about what that is, but I don't see any recurring character kind of stuff. I think it's just more of a vibe and a area and maybe that kind of stuff. But the way it kind of sets out, and maybe again, why I thought it was a one and done, that maybe it was going to lead into what we're expecting from the movie.
Okay.
But it seems like there's a lot more runway here for them to do more things, and I'm all for it because, you know, we kind of talked about it off air. The leads in this thing aren't really well known. You're bringing back a Vinnie Jones and having some other notable faces, Giancarlo Esposito, everybody's favorite fuckbag, you know, that's also, of course, in the drug trade in this one. He's perfect for this particular series. And God, I didn't expect especially to love him doing Guy Ritchie dialogue. It's so delicious to have as well. But, you know, the main people who are in here, I had to look them up. I was like, you look familiar, but I don't really know you. Like, Theo James is like the lead in here, where he's in a monarch, low-level monarch family. Like, he's a duke as he progresses when his father dies in this movie. His father was the duke, and then he takes over the role, inherits the role. So there's a little bit of like high society aristocratic stuff, and he's a part of that. His brother looks very familiar. I think we looked into that, and you were catching more of it, like maybe some Netflix connections in terms of like other TV series that you watch. Like you mentioned Sex Education, some of these other things, but a lot of it is because they're British characters. I looked like they're kind of maybe more from, you know, say like shows like Skins or something, like these shows that were like big BBC shows that maybe now they're in here now. But yeah, I was just so impressed. It's a deep, fun cast, well-developed characters, storyline. You've followed it all the way through, all the chess pieces, the backstabbing, the different levels of the business. You know, it's incredible. And it's mostly drug trade, but it's got obviously the layers of it in terms of distribution issues, you know, competition issues, and, you know, just everything, absolutely everything. And it definitely harkens you back to old school Guy Ritchie. And God damn, I enjoyed all 8 episodes to burn this out in like 2 days.
Nice. You got me excited because I told you I watched the first episode. I'm hooked in already.
Well, the first episode, you already probably have that vibe, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Because
like, I think that one was full on. Like, it's Guy Ritchie. I don't know if he doesn't direct all 8 episodes, but I think he directs like the first few, and you could tell.
Yeah.
And it's more snappy a little bit. So, but it's all him. Him and his writing partner that he's frequent collaborators with who did the show. But yeah, I the only thing I fear is if they do go forward and maybe Guy Ritchie, because, you know, if he's a guy who made 2 movies last year, he's a very busy fellow, that maybe, you know, he can't be as hands-on going forward, and then it's more in a showrunner's thing, and maybe it has a little bit of a different character to it. But in this one, I'm all smiles because it's mostly like very Guy Ritchie.
Okay, awesome.
So, yeah. So that's really what was the weekend that was. You have the Oscars, limited stuff in theaters, a few options that are worthy. Definitely The Gentleman and my thing. I'm, you know, we kept looking, right,
yeah,
Shane? We kept looking for that show that we can champion going maybe into a first half awards thing. We're here in March, and this is by far the most addictive and fun show that I was looking for. Like, you know, in the absence of a reacher or something, right, you need something a little diabolical, a little crime heavy, a little just, you know, something to just enjoy And that's exactly what this is. So that's a high mark for me. I hope you love it. I want to hear when you actually get through all 8 episodes on that to see if you felt the same. Anything else on the brain or anything else you wanted to shout out there before we get on out in this shorty of an episode?
No, that's about it. Looking forward to this week. Love Lies Bleeding. I think we're both going to go see that, right?
That is the hope. Yep.
And I'm going to go see a movie called Knox Goes Away in the theater.
Okay. I think I've heard of that.
That is that? Michael Keaton, Al Pacino, James Marsden, Gay Harden.
Marsha Gay Harden. Yep. Yeah.
And Ray McKinnon.
Okay. So some old school people that we like.
Yeah. I didn't know it was coming out. I saw the thing, and it's about a contract killer's diagnosed with a fast moving form of dementia. He's presented with the opportunity to redeem himself by saving the life of his estranged son, but he has to race against the police and his memory. So, it looks like it could be fun. So, never heard of it. It just popped up on my Regal app. I'm like, well, I'm going to go see 2 this week. So, that's what's on my mind this week, brother.
Sounds good. I know, you know, again, there's TV to be watched. I got to catch up on Shogun, some of these other shows we've been talking about. So I got to do that as well. So yes, Guy Ritchie, you have the belt for me right now, but watch out for Shogun.
Yeah.
That's a weekly that might sneak up and take some other belt, because I enjoyed the hell out of that first episode that I watched. So, and I still got to catch up with The Regime, which I started to see whether I'm going forward with that. So there's some stuff
out there.
Of course, I'm going to be watching the new Lindsay Lohan movie for Netflix coverage this week.
Friday, right?
Yeah, Irish Wish.
Okay.
All
right.
Pray for Mojo there, man. Let's hopefully get through that unscathed. I generally like Lindsay Lohan, but she could be in some goofy stuff.
Yeah, but if it's half as decent as that goofy Christmas movie she did, I'm fine
with it. Yeah, that's all I'm asking. Yeah. If that's the bar, I'm fine.
Yeah.
You know, this might be a tough March, but again, we have Dune 2, and gentlemen, if that's all you gave me for a month, that's like a blessing compared to the first couple months of this year. And the Oscars were good too. That's like a blessing in disguise as a three and a half hour endeavor. So please have more of that going forward. Good job by you as always, everybody out there. You know, tell a friend, give us a 5-star review. Send us a DM, tell us you love us, whatever you got to do. Just something to brighten our day. Yeah. Send more people to the party. We will have some of those things that we mentioned before in coverage next time on the show. So be sure to subscribe now and come back next time for more recent activity.